From Kerry Lutz's Financial Survival Network Substack, The Silver Roller Coaster, Part 3, The Crash Before the Biggest Move in History. Silver investors have experienced enough motion sickness for one lifetime. Silver began its historic run near $32 an ounce, ripped through the supposedly impenetrable $50 barrier and exploded to an intraday high above $121 in January. In percentage terms, silver nearly quadrupled while most investors were still waiting for confirmation that the bull market had begun. Then the floor disappeared. In just three trading days, silver crashed approximately 41%. The selling continued until it reached $54.74 in July, a decline of roughly 55% from the January peak. Anyone who bought near the top watched half of his investment evaporate before he could finish ordering the monster box. That sounds like the end of a speculative bubble. According to noted precious metals analyst David Erfel, it may be something entirely different. He believes the silver market is following a remarkably similar path to what happened during the financial crisis of 2008 and that the violent decline could be setting up the biggest move in silver's history. We have seen this movie before. In March 2008, silver traded above $20 an ounce. The metal had been climbing for years. The commodity bull market was roaring and investors believed precious metals had finally entered the mainstream. Then Lehman Brothers collapsed, credit markets froze, and investors began selling anything that was not nailed down. Silver was supposedly a safe haven, but during a liquidity crisis, investors do not sell what they want to sell. They sell whatever they can sell. Silver collapsed from $20.92 to $8.88. That was a decline of nearly 58%. The fundamentals had not disappeared. The silver had not vanished. Industrial demand had not permanently ended. The paper market simply experienced a massive liquidation as leveraged investors were forced to raise cash. The decline from $121.58 to $54.74 was approximately 55%. The similarity is difficult to ignore. In both cases, silver enjoyed an enormous advance, attracted speculative capital, and then suffered a liquidation so brutal that it convinced nearly everyone the bull market was finished. The people who bought the top felt betrayed. The people who missed the rally felt vindicated. Both groups were looking backward. What happened after 2008? Silver did not remain below $9 for long. By the end of 2009, it had climbed back near $17. It passed $30 during 2010 and eventually reached $49.21 in April 2011. From its 2008 low, silver appreciated more than 450% in approximately 2.5 years. The real silver move did not occur before the 2008 crash. It occurred after it. The crash eliminated leverage, shattered confidence, and transferred metal and mining shares from weak hands to strong ones. When investment demand returned, there were fewer sellers standing in the way. That is the parallel Erfel sees today. If silver merely repeated its percentage gain from the 2008 bottom to the 2011 peak, a move of approximately 450% from $54.74 would put the metal above $300 an ounce. Suddenly, Erfel's seemingly outrageous $300 silver target does not look quite so outrageous. The difference this time: history never repeats perfectly, but the present silver market may be more fundamentally powerful than the one that existed in 2008. Silver is no longer primarily a monetary metal, jewelry metal, or photography commodity. It has become indispensable to solar panels, electric vehicles, electronics, medical equipment, advanced weapons systems, and the enormous data center build-out required by artificial intelligence. More than half of annual silver demand now comes from industrial applications. At the same time, approximately 3/4 of newly mined silver is produced as a byproduct of copper, lead, zinc, and gold mining. A silver producer can respond to higher prices by expanding production. A copper producer is not going to open a new copper mine merely because the small amount of silver inside the ore has become more valuable. That makes silver supply unusually unresponsive to price. The world can want substantially more silver without the mining industry being able to produce substantially more silver. New mines require capital, permits, infrastructure, and years of development. no one can press a button and manufacture another 200 million ounces. Paper silver can be created instantly. Physical silver cannot. The $121 peak was not the destination. The market's mistake was assuming that $121 represented the culmination of the silver bull market. It may have represented nothing more than the completion of its first speculative phase. Silver moved too far and too quickly. Leverage increased. Late buyers chased the price. The dollar strengthened, expectations of higher interest rates returned, and forced liquidations turned a correction into an avalanche. But a violent correction does not automatically invalidate a bull market. Sometimes it is what makes the next advance possible. The plunge removed much of the speculative excess while doing virtually nothing to solve the underlying supply problem. Industrial users still require silver. Mine supply remains constrained. The numbers are almost too perfect. The 2008 decline took silver from $20.92 to $8.88, a loss of about 58%. The 2026 decline took silver from $121.58 to $54.74, a loss of about 55%. Government debts continue growing, currencies continue losing purchasing power, and the world is becoming more not less dependent upon electrification. Silver's price was cut in half. Its strategic importance was not. Silver then rose from $8.88 in 2008 to $49.21 in 2011, an advance of approximately 454%. Apply the same move to the recent $54.74 low and the result is roughly $303 silver. Markets do not repeat themselves with mathematical precision, but they do repeat the same emotional cycle: enthusiasm, euphoria, leverage, panic, capitulation, and disbelief. We have already experienced the enthusiasm, euphoria, leverage, and panic. Capitulation may have occurred at $54. Disbelief is where we are now. The next question is not simply whether silver eventually rises again. The real questions are where the critical levels lie, what will confirm that the next advance has begun, and how gold and silver investors can recognize the difference between another temporary bounce and the start of the historic move Erfel believes is coming. Those are the questions I will address in my next special gold and silver report, available exclusively to members of the Insider Advantage. The most dangerous market in the world, silver, is not gold with a lower admission price. It is a much smaller, thinner, and more volatile market. When investment money enters, the price can move farther than almost anyone expects. When leveraged money leaves, it can fall fast enough to make grown men reach for the Dramamine. That volatility is not a defect in the silver story. It is the silver story. The move from $32 to $121 demonstrated what can happen when investment demand collides with a relatively small physical market. The collapse to $54 demonstrated what happens when the paper market reverses and leverage is flushed from the system. The next phase could demonstrate what happens when investors return to a market whose underlying shortage was never resolved. David Erfel believes $10,000 gold and $300 silver may eventually prove conservative. After watching silver nearly quadruple, lose more than half its value, and begin rebuilding its base all within a remarkably compressed period, that forecast can no longer be dismissed as fantasy. The silver roller coaster has already completed its first climb and its most terrifying drop. Now it may be approaching the part of the ride that makes everything before it look like the warm-up. My upcoming special report will examine the gold and silver setup, the critical signals I am watching, and the developments that could ignite the next phase of this market. It will not be released publicly,